Why don't we, let's see. Family tree here.
Okay.
Now, let's see. Which one of these was Whistling Billy? Or is he
that
on
was,
this list?
That was my granddaddy.
Oh, okay.
That was John William. Yeah, John William Thompson.
Oh, okay.
See, and Grandma Thompson, my grandmother, was Lucy Jane Broom.
Uh-huh.
And then their oldest son was James Monroe.
Okay, and you said that he...
Yeah, he...
Tell me about
Grandpa him. Thompson, he died before I was born, but they tell me that that he was such a good whistler that a lot of the people in neighbors and friends in the community that was hooked up on the same telephone line would a lot of times call up and get him to whistle tunes on the telephone, sort of a conference call, and he was known among a lot of his neighbors and friends as Whistling Billy, and they used to enjoy hearing him whistle on the phone. I wish I could live, I wish he could live long enough where I could see him.
And now he you said he was blonde and blue-eyed?
Yeah, blonde, blue-eyed. And that's where one of his daughters, Aunt Ola Lively, married Albert Lively, she was a blonde, blue-eyed, just almost albino blonde, real blonde.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, her daughter, Irma Lively, was blue-eyed blonde. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, let's see, looking back over the other ancestors and all, now, was it Grandpa Crook that was in the Civil War?
Yeah, that was Mother's dad. And their family originally came to Texas from Georgia after the war. I don't know just when they moved to Texas, but their original home was in Cartersville, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Grandpa Crook was fought in both the Battle of Chickamauga and Missionary Ridge at Chattanooga, Tennessee. And he was taken prisoner I don't know just when. But anyway, he was taken prisoner and ended up serving as a cook in a prison camp the rest of the war. I don't know what prison camp he was in, but that's what I've heard from... my mother's family, that that he was taken prisoner by the North and was served some time as a cook in a prison camp.
Mm-hmm.
But he survived the war. He wasn't wounded or anything, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. So now, your parents, did they meet there in that area of Palestine? Or?
I think Dad was working... at the time, if my memory serves me correctly, Dad was working at the city waterworks at Tyler,
mm-hmm.
Texas. See, Mother's family, Grandpa Crook's home was just outside Tyler, there at Pleasant Retreat, little community outside of Tyler. And I think he saw her at either a church gathering or some kind of a social gathering and made necessary arrangements to meet her. And I think that's where they met. I might be wrong on that, but I believe that's the story that I've heard,
mm-hmm.
that that's where they met.
Now, did he, how early in life did he start working with the railroad?
Railroad. Shortly after that, because he had 48 years seniority. Of course, there was that stretch in there from about 1930, during the Depression, up until January 2 of 1945, that he was off.
Mm-hmm.
So it was about 14 years that he was out of service.
Mm-hmm.
But I think his seniority went on.
Oh, I see.
So
mm-hmm.
He retired in 52, and with 48 years service, that would mean that he went to work about 1904, wouldn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. 1952 from, and you subtract 48 from that, that'd leave four. So it'd be 19 and 4 would be a good estimated number when he went to work for
railroad. Okay, so that he would have been about 26.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so did he start out?
He started out as a fireman.
Okay.
And of course, that's the way the engine men go. You start out as a fireman, and then you take examinations for engineer. And when you pass, and you're promoted up to engineer. The engineer and fireman's extra board. See, it went on seniority. All the railroad men in those days, and I guess even now, work on a seniority basis.
Mm-hmm.
And if you at a level where you've got more time than another guy, well, you could bid on his job. In other words, what they call bumping him. You know, he could just go down and say, okay, I'm going to bump you off this job. And then he in turn would bump the next guy off, you know, and it was this domino effect a lot of time. And Dad was telling me that, of course, he worked up to the point to where he had a regular fireman's job. And then he had passed the engineer's exam, so he was on what you call an engineer's extra board. When they get down to the point where they didn't have any regular engineers for a certain run, then they'd go to this extra board and take the top man there, see? And that's the way he began to get experience in as a rated engineer. Then as he, you know, got more time log on the engineer's extra board, he finally got to where he could hold a regular engineer's job.
Mm-hmm.
And then build his seniority on up from then, see, as an engineer. So that when he retired, he was a senior engineer on that division.
Mm-hmm.
And he held the top job. He was the engineer on the Missouri Pacific Eagle, which was the charge job of the whole thing.
Now, was that a passenger?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Missouri Pacific Eagle from Houston to St. Louis. And he spent some time on the Eagle from, he was on what they call train 27, not train 21 and 22, which ran from Palestine to Longview on that division line.
Mm-hmm.
He spent a lot of time on that run. He'd leave Palestine early in the morning about 4 o'clock and get to Longview around 8:30, 9 o'clock. And spend the rest of the day, and then late that afternoon or in wee hours of the evening, start back to Palestine. That's where when I was in school at A&M, and your mother and I would go home on the weekend, maybe we'd be down Lost Prairie Lake, you know. Well, I knew about what time he was due to come through Wells Creek, down there about 4 miles out of Palestine. You remember the creek bottom down there when you'd be going to Lost Prairie Lake to cross that creek. So I had made arrangements with him. I told him anytime that I could get down there and see him come through, why I'd signal him with a flashlight, you know. So when I'd go down and park my car about 5 minutes before he was due to come through, you know, boy, he might be running late on one of those big steam engines, and he'd be making up time, boy, and I'd hear him coming down on the other side of the hill, and boy, when he'd go by me, he'd just that big engine, just a flutter, it'd be exhaust, would be, and drive wheels going around so fast you couldn't hardly see it, and he'd wave as he'd go by. You know, Bill, I've kicked myself 100 times that I had so many opportunities after I came home and he went back on the road to get pictures of him on the train and didn't get a single one, not one. And well, I could have got pictures of him, you know, could have gotten a moving picture camera, could have gotten the actual train and movement, going through Elkhart, coming in, going like that at Wells Creek, and then when he was on the diesel, you know.
Well, you've got your memories of him, and I think a lot of times that's, you know, better, because so many times when you're trying to take pictures and you don't really get to enjoy it, you know, while it's happening.
Yeah.
So I think that's all right. Of course, you know, I'd like to see the pictures if you had them, but, you know, here I'm hearing you talk about
it. You know, it was really a sad situation when he retired. The fellow, the engineer that bid the job and got it, the next senior engineer was a fellow named Bolden Perry, a good friend of mine. And his fireman, who was Dad's fireman, he was a regular engineer, I mean a regular fireman on that run, John Ed Hatzenbuehler, had been an outstanding high school football star at Palestine back in the mid-30s.
Mm-hmm.
And John really helped Dad there shortly in the year, probably before he retired, because Dad was beginning to have arthritis so bad, you know, that trouble, didn't feel good all the time, and John was a promoted engineer, so Dad would just a lot of times turn it over to him after they cleared the station, you know, let him run it. That's the way firemen promoted as engineers get their time anyway, you know, mm-hmm. experience. And he was just a good man. Anyway, it was about a month after Dad retired that Mr. Perry and John were coming out of Houston on the Eagle one afternoon about 5 o'clock. Was when they, you know, they'd leave around 4:30, I think, headed for Palestine. And they got out there about where that Hardy Street toll road starts, mm-hmm. about the 610 North Loop in that area there, mm-hmm. where those two intersect. And then they hit that straight track, which is just straight as an arrow all the way to Conroe. Mm-hmm. But somewhere on Hardy Street there, one of the crossings, this tank truck got up on the track and stalled, and they plowed into it, mm-hmm. and of course a big ball of fire killed both Mr. Perry and John Ed. That really tore Dad up. And, because, see, that was just about a month after he retired. Mm.
And that was a run that he was making?
Yeah, he could have been on that run. But anyway, he really enjoyed in railroad, you know, just in his blood. And mm-hmm. when he wanted to go back on the road, I guess along about the time that your mother and I, or shortly before we married, one Sunday afternoon, I know we drove over to Elkhart to watch him come through. That was when he was before the diesel. He was on a steam engine then. Mm-hmm. Big 1100 steam engine boy. He went through Elkhart, you know, eyeballing him, boy.
But now he drove the diesels later, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he said a lot of times on that Eagle run from Houston to Conroe at straight track level, a lot of times he said if he just held the throttle on that diesel, he didn't watch himself, it began to creep up. You know, just so like you do on the accelerator, your foot gets heavy. Mm-hmm. And he said that thing would start creeping up. And of course, you know, I think he had a limit of 85. And he said he'd look down, you know, if he didn't watch it pretty close, that thing would be creeping up over 90. Boy. But
I guess back at that time, there really wasn't a whole lot between Houston and Conroe, or?
No, there wasn't. Spring.
It was just
there
woods,
was a,
huh?
the town of Spring. Well, they had a little road crossing at Westfield.
Yeah.
And then they had Spring and Tammany, just a sidetrack.
Right.
Sidetrack. And I think, I don't know whether it was a little store over there across from the railroad or not, but very little. Mm-hmm. And I know when I was working as a mail clerk, boy, it was, and this was in 47, mostly at 47. Why, they, you know, it's just woods almost mm-hmm. all the way.
Mm-hmm.
Until you got down to past Westfield, and then you begin to pick up the residences along Hardy Street, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there
mm-hmm.
was mostly just residences. There wasn't really much industry even, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, let's see, tell me some about how he would get you guys up in the morning and all that good stuff.
Okay, well, when Lee and Jimmy were there with us on the old gamble place, why, on those cold mornings, and each one of us slept in a double bed, big old room, and we had three double beds in there and still had plenty of room. That's how big the rooms were in that old gamble house. And
must have been a big house.
Oh, it was. It was built back in the Civil War days.
Mm.
And square nails and columns. And Dad had come in the first time he came in, he'd come and stick his head in the door and he'd say, "Hop rattling time." And boy, we knew what was coming. So he'd give you that one chance, and in about 5 minutes, if somebody wasn't stirring in there, he'd come back with a cold wash rag and he'd just lay the cover back and drag that along your leg, boy. I guarantee that'd wake you up. One time, Randall Gilmore, my buddy that was a highway patrolman, used to spend a lot of time together. And one summer, I think it was just about the time that Diane was born, and Mama was in Houston to be with Bonnie while the baby was born. So Dad and Lee and Jimmy and I were batching for about 6 weeks. And so Gilmore spent the night, but he was working at a service station there in Palestine at that time, and he spent the night with him. And of course, in September, and it was hot. And So Dad came in the next morning, you know, and he said, "Hawk rattling time." It was on a Saturday, I think, or Sunday, might have been a Sunday morning. Anyway, nobody had to go anywhere, you know. And so old Gilmore said, "I wonder if he really would, what do you do if we just lay here and took it even after he broke the wet rain?" I said, "I know what he'd do. He'd probably be able to go in there and get a bucket of water and throw it on." And so he said, "Well, let's test him." So he came in, you know, and he said, "Uh-huh." So he just laid the cover back and dragged that wet rain. We just smiled, you know, just like he was enjoying every minute of it, you know. He just smiled, turned around. I said, "Oh, I bet you he's going to get the water." And sure enough, boy, he came back, he had a big old 5-gallon can, and he just whoosh, that mattress didn't dry out for a month.
What were some other funny things that you can remember about?
Well, let's see, I remember one time when we was living on the Gamble place there, while this Mr. Gamble had a little old bull that had horns about 2 or 3 inches long, and he was beginning to get pretty vicious, and he was tearing up the fences. You know, he'd try to get through the wire, barbed wire fences and everything. And so he did, he got out and got loose a couple of times, and they had trouble getting him back in. Finally, why, he was, he'd make out like, you know, he's starting to paw the dirt like a bull, do, you know, fighting bulls. He was a vicious little rascal. And so Dad said, one time he just about tore the fence down, and Dad said, "Get me that 22. I got that 22 rifle. Took that, and he just leveled it up on this fence post, took aim and shot that bull horn off, just boom, popped it off just like that. And the bull looked around just like he didn't know what, something had happened here, but I don't know just what it is. And but he didn't get into any more fences, boy.
Mm-hmm.
But he hit that horn just right and just popped it like he'd pop a orange.
What about that time he got a snake that was getting your
head? Oh, yeah. That was when we lived out of Slocum. I guess I was about the 7th grade. And I was out one, I think it happened one Sunday afternoon. And on the fence there around the barn lot, why, I had me a seat built up on top of the fence. And on this post, I had a little hole hauled out where I'd crack hickory nuts. We had hickory trees, you know, and we'd pick those hickory nuts and crack them with a hammer. They're tough nuts to crack anyway. And I was sitting up there on my fence seat eating hickory nuts, and I glanced back over towards the barn and the cow shed. They had a cow stall where the door went into where the cows were milked and fed. And then Mama had two rows of chicken nests along the wall there where the hens could get up there and lay. And then the other half of the barn was a door that opened into a feed stall. And the boards had cracks about 1.5 inches wide, some of them, you know, and just open to the ground. Well, anyway, I looked over and I saw this snake go along from the, where the cow stall entrance was into the feed door, and was slithering up in there. Boy, I hollered, "Dad!" And he thought I was hurt or something, you know, and he'd come running out through the back door, you know, "What is it? What is it?" I said, "There's a snake out here." Boy, he come running, and by this time the snake had gone in the door and was about halfway down the length into either a hole in the ground or just in this crack in the board. Mm-hmm. And so I was right behind him, you know, curious what he was going to do. And he says, "So stand clear of the door." And boy, I saw him take that snake's tail and wrap it around about 3 times around his hand where he got a good grip on it. And then whoop, he come out like that, and boy, that snake slung out there almost to the fence where I'd been sitting. Must have been 35 feet that thing slung. I mean, he gave him a pull. And then, of course, the snake was stunned, and Dad run out there and reached around, got his tail again wrapped around his hand, and says, "Pow!" and popped his head off.
God.
That snake was about 6.5 feet long.
God.
Yeah, he's just like a whip, boy. He just, bam! Boy, and it popped his head off.
What kind of snake?
Chicken snake.
Chicken snake.
Yeah. Yeah, he was after those eggs in the hen's nest.
So y'all had some chickens, and did you have some other?
Yeah, we had chickens and cows, and Dad always had a good garden.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a little while we lived there at this same place, renting at this place. Why?
Now, was that at Slocum?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And had a little old squirrel, Lee Metter, mm-hmm. Lee's daddy, mm-hmm. had shot into this squirrel nest over at Maydale when they were squirrel hunting. This little squirrel fell out of the nest.
Oh, uh-huh.
And they took it and fed it with an eyedropper, and then gave it to me. And we had this old chicken coop that was about 10 inches deep and about 4 feet by 4 feet. And Dad got this old packing straw, mm-hmm. and put in that with wire, so the wire was close enough mesh that the squirrel couldn't get out through mm-hmm. the openings, you know, but plenty of air.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And he was the best weather prophet you ever saw. That little old squirrel would get in there, if there's going to be a change in the weather, he'd just tear that packing straw up. He'd have it rain, so he'd pick it like he wanted it. But if there's going to be a change in the weather, boy, you watch, he'd start tearing that stuff apart and changing it, you know, moving it to a different mm-hmm. location and all this. And you could say, boy, there's going to be a change in the weather. And sure enough, there would. He was a good weather forecaster, that little old squirrel. Name was Philbert. And another thing that he enjoyed doing was playing with kids. You know, like I was telling you, one baby was about the same age as William. Mm-hmm. Why, he'd put them straddle of his arm, you know, and then he'd sing those little ditties for him. But
I've seen some pictures where y'all would like hold a baby in your hand, or the stand in your hand.
Yeah, you did, in my hand.
Yeah.
We got pictures of you doing that.
How old was I then?
I was trying to think. You probably, you were walking.
I wasn't?
Oh, yeah, I think. So you must have been about 14 months old, I guess. Mm-hmm. And you stand up out there, you know. I had a little derby. There's some little pictures taken on Adam Street there. Dad holding me out there with that little derby hat on.
Standing up in his hand.
Yeah. Dad was a mighty man. Uncle Jim, he's told me stories about when he was, Dad was a younger man. Boy, he was powerful. And Uncle Farrell, one of Dad's brothers, this was back in the days, in those days, that Palestine was open as far as saloons were concerned. Mm-hmm. The whole front street there was just one saloon after another. And Uncle Farrell was the type of personality, he loved to fight. And especially when he'd get drunk or halfway drunk, you know, he wanted to fight. And the story goes that one of these friends of Dad saw that Uncle Farrell was about to get into a problem in one of these saloons, you know, and he knew where Dad was, and he went and told him, says, you better get around there and get your brother because he's about to get in trouble. Dad went around there, and Uncle Farrell, he said, come on, let's go. And Uncle Farrell said, no, he wasn't ready to go. And Dad said, yeah, I think you are. And so he squared off and was going to take on Dad, and boy, Dad just popped him one time on the chin, knocked him cold on the micro, put him over his shoulder and hauled him out of there. But Uncle Farrell had a reputation of being quite a fighter. In fact, Aunt Ella, his wife, was telling us, me and Leonard one time, that that's the reason she married him, because he was such a good fighter. Said they went to a dance over in Louisiana. Uncle Farrell was working, he was a blacksmith for the railroad company. Mm-hmm. And Aunt Ella was at this dance, and Uncle Farrell got into a fight with some guy, and she saw him, you know, and she said, that man's for me. And ended up, she did marry him, too. And then one of Dad's brothers, Uncle Lloyd, who was also an engineer for the Missouri Pacific with a long service, he was, in his younger days, was in the U.S. Army, and was in the Boxer Rebellion, you may have heard, in China,
yeah,
in 1900.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a young soldier in the 15th Infantry, and fought in action there, and then in the Philippine Insurrection against, what was that Philippine leader's name, Aguinaldo, mm-hmm. Leader of the Philippine Insurrection. And in fact, Uncle Lloyd's son, my cousin Leonard Thompson, mm-hmm. Leonard's middle name is Funston, after General Funston, who was the commander of American forces in the Philippines when he was there, when Uncle Lloyd was there. And he was a fighter too, but he controlled himself. He was a boxer, mm-hmm. and he was a division champion in his weight as a boxer. But he was a little guy, you know. Mm-hmm. Floyd was little. Uncle Farrell was a lot heavier than he, mm-hmm. was tall. But Uncle Farrell had a jovial laugh. I don't know whether you remember or not, but your mother and you and Lynn and I went to I guess it was an anniversary of Uncle Farrell and Aunt Ella over at Port Neches. Mm-hmm. I don't know how old y'all were then. You weren't very old. Mm-hmm. But we went over there to Port Neches and spent the day at this family get-together, sort of reunion, mm-hmm. you know, for an honor of that. And that was the last time that I ever saw him. Because mm-hmm. he didn't live too much longer after that.
Now, when, let's see, tell me about y'all's church life and all when you were growing up. Sammy was a real devoted Christian.
Well,
and
Dad was too.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we lived to start off, my first story that I'll tell you about church life was, they said Mom and Dad belonged to the First Christian Church here in Houston out there on Fannin. Mm-hmm. And one Sunday night at the service, choir director or song leader got up and was leading his Power in the Blood, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't know how old I was, it must have been 4 or 5, and I busted out laughing because, as it turned out, he was saying, there's power, power, wonder-working power in the blood. I thought he was going, pow, pow. I thought he was playing guns, you know, and I started laughing. They couldn't get me to stop, and they said, what's the matter? And I said, well, he's saying, pow, pow. So that was funny. But anyway, the next thing I remember about church life was when we lived at Slocum. Mm-hmm. And a little community like that had circuit preachers. They had two church houses. One was called the Baptist Church, and the other one was just the church house. Mm-hmm. And the Baptist Church had a preacher that came one Sunday out of the month, mm-hmm. and then the next Sunday would be a Methodist preacher over at this other church, which was right close together. And then the following Sunday, then, the Christian preacher, Brother Hammer, was a big, robust fellow, red-headed fellow. And he used to come, when he'd come his Sunday to preach, he'd used to come on Saturday and spend the night at our house. And because there was no motels or anything like that, he'd just spend the night with some of the people in the community, you know. Mm-hmm. And he always brought me a little puzzle at work, you know, some kind of little trick thing. Mm-hmm. I remember him for that. And Brother Copeland, the Methodist circuit preacher, on the Sunday that he preached, he was, his son was the bishop here in Houston. I don't know whether you recall, back 10 years or so ago, Bishop Kenneth Copeland.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was his son, mm-hmm. the old mm-hmm. preacher there. And old brother Copeland used to, when he'd be preaching, if something funny happened in his sermon, he'd start laughing. He had a lot of spaces between his front teeth, and he'd go, I used to remember laughing so funny. And in a little country church like that, all of us kids would sit on the front row, you mm-hmm. know. We'd come in, and usually what we'd do, we'd play outside until it was just almost time for church service starting, and we'd make a mad dash and come in and sit on the front row. We'd been playing tag, you know, and having all kinds of running games out there in the summertime. It'd be hot, you know. But anyway, that's the way we'd have a Methodist preacher one Sunday, and then a Christian preacher the next Sunday, and a Baptist preacher the next Sunday. And one Sunday, the fourth Sunday, there'd be no preacher, but everybody would meet at the church house and have singing.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just a big mm-hmm. singing service.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really a wonderful church life uh-huh. while we were there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, when we moved into Palestine, I went to the First Baptist Church. That's where I joined the church when I was a junior in high school. And the preacher was his brother, Calvin Nelson was his name.
Mm-hmm.
First Baptist Church. And then your mother and I went to the First Baptist Church at College Station while we were there. And then when we got to Houston, why, we didn't know what church, we didn't know, you know, where to go. So we visited, while we visited Park Place, and we visited Broadway Baptist Church over there on Lawndale. And Broadway, let's see, there was another one there on Lawndale, I guess it was. Anyway, we visited several, and then we decided the Park Place was the place for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember the first time we went to Park Place, why, you were, where we were sitting in the wing there, we could look out across the way to the nursery wing, and we saw you in the bed there next to the window. You were standing up in that bed.
What was wrong? Oh, where y'all were sitting, like in, what was the chapel later on?
Yeah. And yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we could look across that open space, mm-hmm. and see you standing up over there.
Now, later on, your folks still lived in Palestine?
Yeah, Mom and Dad continued.
Where did they live there in Palestine?
Well, when Dad left the railroad service and retired, they continued to live in a little rock house,
mm-hmm.
there,
yeah.
out from town. But then he began to get pretty feeble, and they sold that place and moved into a house on Green Street,
mm-hmm.
which is the north side of town there. But
mm-hmm.
it was heavily populated, you know, houses
yeah,
next
right.
door.
Yeah.
And they lived there then, was living there when Dad died in August of 53. You were
mm-hmm.
about 6 months old.
Well, what did he die of? Just some natural
He died of bladder and kidney complications, I think. I don't know what to call it, but probably just finally ended up in kidney failure, I guess.
So he was like about
he was about on his 75th birthday.
75.
Yeah,
yeah, sure did.
Mm-hmm. He was born August 8th, 1878, and died August 8th, 1953.
Mm-hmm. And then what did Sammy do after that?
Well, she continued to live there for about a year, just
mm-hmm.
by herself. And then she sold a place and just moved in with Marie. And she'd maybe spent 6 months or so there, and then about 6 months
over
or so
in
with
Jacksonville?
Bonnie. Yeah, with Bonnie,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Down here.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah, so then that's kind of when
yeah.
I can start, you know,
yeah.
remembering
uh-huh.
and all that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
used to get such a big kick out of singing those old folk songs, you know. See, she had about 7 or 8 verses to that one about the spinning wheel,
mm-hmm.
you know,
hmm.
and true love. I've forgotten how the name of the whole thing, but I can only remember one verse of it, you know. And but anyway,
let's sing.
Well, let's see. She said it used to go, sold my rod and sold my reel, then I sold my spinning wheel. Buy my true love sword and shield. Shula ha, burla meet 'em, walla walla roost 'em, seen 'em or sack 'em, ooh la lay.
And there was a bunch more verses.
I didn't get the rest of them. I did learn the verses, you know, on the other.
On the Fairbanks Mail.
Yeah, we got
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I got that.
Yeah.
You know. And then, now your dad had a lot of little funny names for things and all, didn't he? He had Hi Bobby Dinky.
Oh yeah,
all that.
He would see a team of mules or horses with the wagon, and he said, "There goes old Hi Bobby Dinky and Shag Nasty Annie." And then another funny that Dad used to say, if he saw a couple in a car, where the girl was sitting real close, you know, to the man driving, where he said, "There goes Love and Dove," or "There goes Bill and Coo." He was a character. I never will forget when the first time he saw you. You were about 6 weeks old when we bravely drove up one Friday night after I got off from work. They was living on Green Street by that time. And Dad looked at you and he said, "Boy, that boy looks like Eisenhower." You didn't have much hair at that time, you know. And what you did have was a little cotton fuzz almost. Yeah, that boy looks like that.
I was going to ask you, You've always been interested in music and been a big music fan. When did you really start, you know, enjoying music, and were there other members in the family that, you know, enjoyed listening to music and what kind and all that, you know, just like to know.
Well, when I lived out there at Slocum, they used to, Stamps Baxter Music Company out of Dallas used to have what they call singing schools, you know, gospel singing schools, and a lot of the people in the community there would sign up for, you know, for these schools, and I went to one there at Slocum, and I guess that's where I first...
What did they do? I mean...
Well, they just, they were teaching, you know, how to read music, but I didn't get far enough into it to really know how. I was just a kid.
To learn how to read so you could sing?
Yeah, sing out of a book, yeah. And, but we just sang just from memory, the way the tune went, you know. Mm-hmm. And we'd get up, kids would get up in front of the group, you know, and lead the singing.
At church?
You know? Yeah. And old Gilmore and me, other boys and girls in the community. We used to have a great time singing those old songs. We'd get a book down, and old Gilmore and I'd sing together, you know. And but that, I like all kinds of music. You know, I enjoy the instrumentals. I guess I enjoy the instrumentals more than I do the vocals. And I've always been a nut about Marshall music, you know, military band. And I've got quite a few records in there, as you well know, on different military bands. Goldman was one,
mm-hmm.
and Frederick Eastman, Pennell, I think, was one.
Mm-hmm.
And then John Philip Sousa,
mm-hmm.
marches.
Yeah. But when did you kind of develop interest in that, in the school or in the military
I guess,
service?
Well, actually, before I went to A&M, I just sort of had a, I guess from part of the background of history, like in military history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love military history.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, as you can well see over there, most of the books I've got's on World War II.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and then you also enjoy country music.
Yeah,
and,
country,
gospel music.
The real old country music.
Yeah.
I used to love to hear. Dad and I used to, he was a, loved the old bluegrass music.
Did he?
And mm-hmm. we'd tune in after we got a radio. A lot of times on Saturday night, we'd listen to the Grand Ole Opry on radio. And loved the fiddle music, you know, string fiddle music.
And, so y'all would listen to that?
Listen to that, yeah. And then, of course, I remember a lot of times in the morning I'd get up getting ready to go to school, and if the radio was on, we could pick up this Iowa State College at Ames, Iowa,
mm-hmm.
and they had a news program that always started by playing a Marshall band
mm-hmm.
piece, you know, like Semper Fidelis or
mm-hmm.
El Capitan.
They would play the whole
Thunder,
piece?
Yeah, play the whole thing through. Instrument, boy,
I guess you're right about that.
I love that.
Now, did y'all ever have a phonograph?
No.
I guess that was kind of a luxury back
yeah,
then.
Yeah, it was. And we just didn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have a radio for it, so Marie went to work over there at Rusk, and she got the little Stromberg Carlson table model. Boy, that was really great. We got to listen to all the Mr. shows on radio, you know.
Where were the stations broadcasting from?
Most of them from Dallas.
Hmm.
And Fort Worth, we'd get WFAA of Fort Worth and Dallas, KRLD in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't get any Houston stations. It was hard to pick up Houston for some reason or another. We'd get Shreveport.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Palestine had a little old radio station, but they...
Maybe Houston wasn't strong enough signal.
Yeah, that part.
Mm-hmm.
But we get Dallas and Fort Worth real good.
Mm-hmm.
And they, of course, they had four or five stations. They'd have ABC, NBC, and CBS, you know. And I think there was about four or five stations that we could pick up real good up there. In addition to powerful stations like WSM Nashville and WGN Chicago and WLW New Orleans, I think, or WRR.
Mm-hmm. You
but they were
up.
Real powerful, you know.
But you could pick them up fairly well.
Mm-hmm. Used to listen to, first began to be interested in listening to basketball games on was Kentucky, Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
Used to broadcast the University of Kentucky game, you know.
And then y'all used to go to the movies, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Lee and I one of the funny instances, we lived 3 miles out on the Jacksonville Highway and had no car. On weekends, my junior, senior year in high school, I worked at this called Economy Store there in Palestine. A Jewish merchant named Schwartzberg owned it, and he catered to the colored people, you know, shoes and clothing, dry goods. And so we'd work all day Saturday, and then we'd get off from work about 9 o'clock. And then down at the Ritz Theater there in Palestine, they'd have the last Saturday feature and the Sunday-Monday preview. So you see two features and news, movietone news and a cartoon and comedy and all for one price of one. Mm-hmm. And that began around 10:30. So we, in that hour after we leave the work, so we go down and go by Piggly Wiggly store, and you could get nickel candy bars, 3 for a dime. And we'd get these Mr. Good bars that were then, the nickel Mr. Good bar was big as a 35-cent Good bar now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we'd take them into the movie with it, and those things would start melting, you'd stick to the paper, old just chewed up paper and all, you know, and we'd get the spaghetti out of it, you'd wipe the paper up and drop it on the floor. And then after we'd get out of the show, about 1 o'clock, I'd have to walk 3 miles home.